Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Tass.
Thanks, Macca. Our very first guest this morning, of course, is John Pizzuto. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Tass. Good morning, Macca. Although I was hoping for the enduring John Pizzuto, but, you know, I'm just not lucky this morning.
Well, I really need to let I need to introduce you properly, John. John, of course.
Fair enough.
John, of course, is these days a commentator and a lawyer, and probably known because he has also been a former Member of Parliament, formerly the Member for Hawthorne. John does a fair bit of commentary. He writes for a number of the Fairfax papers, and he also does some ABC radio, which I listen to you on occasion, John.
Oh, thank you, Tess. I hope you get something out of it.
Oh, it's always good fun. Did you hear what Macca had to say?
Look, I did. Passionate as usual, Macca.
Do you have any comments on Macca's so-called opinion piece this morning?
Oh, look, I think with major parties and the Labor Party's had its own travails on this, I know. I despair when I see stories about branch stacking because of a couple of things. The most important point I would make about branch stacking in any political party, including in my own, is that it's a dereliction of the party's mission. You know, a party's mission is to achieve a set of ideals, to give voice and definition to a corpus of principles and philosophy. That's the ideal. And if you're not committed to that, then I don't know what business you have in the party you're a member of. The second point I'd make is that I've seen so much of this over the years across different political parties, and I don't know the facts about tomorrow. I've read what everybody's read, but I'll wait to see what comes out.
I haven't read what you've read. What have you been reading, by the way?
Oh, no, just in various media reports over the week, just stories about some of the stuff Macca talked about. There's not a lot of detail, a lot of it's unnamed sources and the like. So all I'm saying is I'm waiting, like everybody else, for what happens tomorrow night when 60 Minutes gives its run, and then we'll know a little bit more about the story. But what I'd say generally about branch stacking that I have seen over many years is it always ends in tears.
Yes.
Yeah.
The authors of these enterprises, they come, I've seen it a million times, guys. Someone will come into the party and they'll realise they've got what I have to say is an important skill in politics, right? For our listeners who might not have been involved in political parties largely depend on volunteerism, right? So you've got to have a skill as somebody involved in politics who can mobilise people without offering them any inducements or financial remuneration for the effort, other than a commitment to a cause, right? And if you've got that ability to mobilise people, that's a very important skill, I have to say. And remember the old get smart line, if you could only use it for good and not bad purposes? It's a bit like that, because I've seen this so many times where people come in, they discover they've got this skill. They can mobilise people in their dozens, even in their hundreds, potentially.
John, I've just had a message from one of our listeners who asks, why are you being so defensive this morning?
I'm just trying to explain what the science and psychology behind branch stacking is. That people will come into a party and they'll realise that they can take it over. If they just keep doing this, they can take it over. And what happens is political parties have within their own kind of, if you like, social, institutional, cultural structure, the ability to withstand that ultimately. But that's what happens. And when I say it ends in tears, eventually stacking comes a cropper.
Yes.
Now, one MP who actually spoke to me about this subject, and I'll read you the SMS. The sadly unifying theme is that the extreme elements in the mainstream parties, and that's Labor, Liberal, Greens, Nationals, is they people use these corrupt mechanisms to then poison the policy and outcomes. And that messes up the whole means and the whole ends. Not caring about one poisons the outcomes of the other. It's terrible, and it shows the importance of the scrutiny of media. Look, all politicians, John, as we know, I think famously you might remember it when Malcolm Turnbull at a Liberal Party federal council meeting, I think it was in New South Wales, said there were no factions in the Liberal Party. And after an incredibly long period of laughter, you know, he said, well, there aren't. You know, there are factions in political parties. There is branch stacking. What it does is it poisons the well for the average voter when they see this stuff happening, because they wonder why does it happen, or why do the parties tolerate it? That's the question, is why do parties tolerate it?
Yeah, can I just distinguish something, because I think it's a really important distinction. Any political party, no matter how big or small, is going to have what I would call a more pragmatic end, a more dogmatic end, a more progressive end, a more conservative. Every organisation on the face of this earth during every year of human history has had that tension built into its system. So the idea of partisanship, internal partisanship, even factionalism, is not inherently a bad thing if it represents a particular set of ideals in contrast to perhaps another set of ideals that roughly coalesce around some general principles. Like, for instance, in my own party, we all generally believe in free enterprise, the importance of individual initiative to change the world. But the capacity for different perspectives around that is enormous. So we do have debate. That's not bad in itself. What corrupts the system is when people come in with a deluded view that if I just go and drag people who don't really know what I'm doing with their membership, if I can drag these people in, and remember the reason they have to go to the extremes is most people in that sort of broad centre know full well why they want to be a member, and no one's going to mess with them and tell them what they're going to do as members. So as a branch stacker, the psychology is you have to go out into the fringes, into the extremes, and drag people in who might not necessarily understand why you're doing that. And that's what corrupts the system. I don't mind. In fact, I would be more surprised if parties didn't have those internal tensions, because the whole idea of a successful movement is that you can mediate between those different views, and you do it in a way where your culture and your institution can act as a kind of civil clearinghouse for those differences. That's the whole point. And that does depend on leadership and a culture inside an organisation that can promote that very thing. So imagine if you're in a political party, you might have a different view on a particular issue. You want the confidence and the assurance to know that you can speak up with a different view and you're not going to be exiled because of it.
Oh, of course.
You're not going to be treated. Yeah, so you want that. But I agree with you, what corrupts the system is when you've got these people who come in, and as I said before, they get the, you can see the gleam in their eye. They think, oh, geez, I can grab the holy chalice here if I just keep, you know, stacking out. And that's the corruption.
John, I have a friend who actually argues that factions are a healthy thing because they are about organising ideas, and it's about creating a contest of ideas within a political party. If that's the case, that is a great thing because it means that people might move across different factions, across different issues. But unfortunately, that's not the way it really plays itself out, though, is it? Often it's more about power. Often it's more about power.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And the mission of any party has to be that we want that diversity of view. We don't want people to feel like they just have to submit to a prevailing orthodoxy and you can't express a different view. I'm not for that. I actually like the idea and find it a healthy sign when a party can handle that difference of opinion. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a difference of principle. So that's what the party has to do. Now, do parties do that well? Do they equip themselves with perfection? Absolutely not. Mm. And my own party has to do a better job of that. I know the Labor Party, sure, has to do a much better job They take what we do to an industrial level altogether.
Well, but, we'll find out a bit more about what the Liberal Party does tomorrow night. So we're all, no doubt, we'll all be watching the 6:30 report tomorrow night.
60 minutes.
60 minutes. What time is it on, Macca?
Look, I don't know.
Do some research while
probably,
I ask.
Probably 7:30.
I'm going to change the topic now. But yeah, do some research and
let's get
us
out
know.
Of the beltway. Yeah,
John, I want to talk about coronavirus. You know, it's a bit hard not to, but in particular, I want to talk a bit about, and I'm interested in your reflections on what's happening in the aged care space in particular. We have already spoken with the head of one of the aged care service peaks, Patricia Sparrow. We've also spoken with a frontline nurse. We've spoken with a number of politicians about this as well. And we also have our own personal reflections. And most of us now will have a personal experience of somebody who is in an aged care setting or knows of somebody who is in an aged care setting. So I suppose my question to you, John, is, why is the federal government dragging its heels on this? Why are they, to me it feels like they are wanting to avoid taking any responsibility. Wouldn't it be easier to just say, we have a problem, let's work on a solution together?
Look, and again, I know our listeners know I'm a Liberal, so it might be a great surprise, but I do think it's necessary to point out that if we think of a royal commission to aged care, Justice Pagoni, or former Justice Pagoni, is conducting a royal commission whose terms of reference have been expanded to inclusion. Now, my view on that is, I think that's a... let it uncover what it needs to uncover. And we've seen this week, Council Assisting Peter Rosen has raised a number of issues. Obviously, that'll be subject to evidence in the royal commission, but at least there's a process. And remember, a royal commission has enormous coercive power, so it can obtain whatever information it needs to. It can compel witnesses. So,
John, but we've got a crisis on at the moment. I don't want to wait for a royal commission to deliver a report in 12 or 18 months' time.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But there is a process which is uncovering this, and uncovering its specific terms of reference. Do look at how can we avoid the mistake. So it will be reporting on an interim basis. We don't have to wait necessarily for a final report. But the other thing, too, I think there's been about $1 billion go in to aged care from state and federal governments. I think there was an announcement yesterday from the federal government which tops up their contribution to about $1 billion towards PPE, towards training, towards guidance and other forms of assistance. So, yes, there's a problem in there. No, I don't think anybody should be pretending there's not. But at least we have an independent body which is specifically looking at how we can avoid those mistakes on an ongoing basis and well into the future. And there does seem to be more funding coming through. But my view is, let's uncover what we need to and avoid the mistakes of the recent past.
So you're on that basis, you're not going to criticise the Premier not answering questions about hotel quarantine because there's an inquiry?
I would say that about both federal and state. I don't think there's any reason why politicians, federal and state, can't answer questions on these matters. Before the Royal Commission, let's remember, whether it's a Royal Commission at the federal level or the formal Board of Inquiry, that's what it's formally called in Victoria. Yeah. It's not a judicial inquiry, it's not a Royal Commission, but it is a formal inquiry, a Board of Inquiry. In either case, I don't buy any politician saying, federal or state, I'm not going to answer that because that's before the Board of Inquiry in Victoria's case of the Royal Commission. Answer the question. There's no sub judice in play.
Yeah, good.
Look,
I think on aged care, John, the challenge that we have is what is... Yes, we know, and you may have well watched Senate estimates where, Brendan Murphy was asked, is there a plan? Well, when does guidance become a plan? It becomes a plan when you put it on the website and rename it a plan, and a plan is a plan when you call it a plan and, you know, all this. Mm. This is something that is the response to COVID in aged care. You know, Minister Colbeck, didn't even know. I mean, this is his portfolio. Didn't even know how many people in aged care had died from it. But this is a problem that has been there for years. So why can't we fix it? I know there's a lot of money being thrown at it at the moment. There's a lot of challenges with the surge workforce and everything. But, you know, aged care in so many areas has been a disgrace for decades. yet we've done nothing. Why?
Yeah, I think we've done things, but we've not done nearly enough. And it's not an area where any one solution fixes everything. So one of the big areas of challenge is workforce and workforce retention. It's a big issue. It's not the only issue, but it's an enormous challenge for organisations, both state-run organisations to the extent that we've got them around the country, and also private providers. Really tough finding the staff to, you know, go after a short period because it's very demanding work. There's a whole range of things like inducements, levels of pay and the rest, I think is really important. The other thing too is it's such a sensitive area and it's complicated. The funding models are complicated. I'm not defending any of this, by the way, guys. I'm just trying to find a way to explain why Macca makes the point, which is not an unreasonable one, that after so many goes at this, we're still sort of struggling for answers. My hope is that out of this process, the Royal Commission, which includes COVID, but it's not restricted to, and it shouldn't be. I'm dealing with a particular family at the moment trying to help them, and their mum was in a privately run facility, a well-known one, and you know the sort of treatment that she was subject to over the last couple of years was absolutely appalling. Mm. And so this was all occurring well before then. So you're right, and I don't have the magic bullets, but I would hope that what COVID might have done and might do for us is that it will create a bit of momentum to get us to the next level of reform, and we're just going to have to keep working at it.
But I want to go back to my original question. Why is the federal government doing its very best to avoid taking any responsibility? Yes, they've thrown a bit of money in it, but, I mean, you know, seriously, I mean, I hear the comments that are made by some of our federal politicians and what they say, we regulate, the state actually administers. Well, that's
well,
actually,
no, no, they say it's
in
a public,
pandemic.
They say it's a
in
public
a pandemic.
It's a public health issue. But, you know, they're not taking responsibility, John. This is what upsets people, that responsibility, just as in Victoria, responsibility, you know, around hotel quarantine, you know, this is the same thing, is that all people want is for governments to actually take responsibility, and I don't think in this case the feds are taking responsibility.
Well, again, in fairness, I don't think anybody's happy with what's been happening, so that's the first thing I'd concede that. But in fairness to the Prime Minister, I mean, he did offer an apology this week. There's more funding coming through the system. I agree that the minister's performance could have been better. Let me say that.
Could have been better? John, could have been better. I mean,
John, it sounds like you're arguing on partisan lines for a change.
He's hapless. He's hopeless. What should happen is Richard Colbeck should spend 3 months in an aged care facility and see what it's like. That's what should happen.
Look, yeah, I'm not trying to be obviously partisan, but I'm trying to just present what the federal government might argue to the assertion that it doesn't care or it's not taking any responsibility. I would hope that, as I said earlier, Tass and Macca, that the Royal Commission uncovers what it needs to. And I'm not one for it shying away from any of the tough calls. If it makes findings and they're highly adverse to governments, federal and state, then let that be the case. Let the truth come out, is my view.
We've had a plethora of messages from listeners this morning, including people reacting and to some of the commentary. But I just wanted to signal one out, and that is a message from Joe Ball,
yes,
who's the chief executive of Switchboard, who really is just reminding us that they are currently supporting 30 older LGBTIQ people who are living in aged care facilities, many of whom have been locked in their rooms even after a positive test,
yeah,
in fear of infection and contamination. And of course, they're also supporting an additional 40 people who are living in the community in their own homes. So they're hearing about stories of people who are being locked in their rooms for days on end and having a really challenging time. Joe, thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
We might ask you to come in and talk about that in the next week or two.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass.
Thank you, Macca. John, back. You back there again?
John who?
Yeah, sure.
We are speaking with John Pizzuto.
I would dare leave.
John, let's change topics. unless there's anything else that you'd like to say about the aged care scenario.
I'll take your guidance, gentlemen.
So we're interested in superannuation. Last week we did speak with the Minister for Superannuation, Jane Hume.
And Assistant Minister for Financial Services as
she
well.
She is, you're right, Macca. We did speak about the impact on superannuation and what this means for people in the long term. What are your views about the superannuation guarantee levy? Jane did argue that, you know, it is an asset like any other asset that people have, and they should be able to deal with it in whatever other way they can deal with any other asset. In other words, take it, use it, sell it, grow it, etc. What are your thoughts about that?
Look, the first thing I'd say is it is a difficult issue in the sense that either way you're sort of juggling between the short term and the long term, in that people are obviously in need of as much financial security as they can get right now, but that would come at the expense of longer term security. I think, you know, given where we are at the moment, exploring options is not necessarily a bad thing. If it doesn't mean that there's a negative impact on wages growth. So what I mean by that is you've got a number of fairly independent voices now, from the Reserve Bank to ACOS, the Productivity Commission to Grattan, all arguing that superannuation increases tend to depress or have a depressive effect on wages growth. If you, let's say, delay the increases because of COVID-19, for example, and that results in higher wages growth overall, I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I would be concerned if the modelling were to show that by delaying the increase in the superannuation guarantee from 9.5 to 10, I think, from July next year, and then up to 12 by, I think it's 2025 from memory. If that didn't result in wages growth, then it would be a double whammy for particularly middle to lower income earners. So as long as that modelling stacks up, I actually am open to that idea. But if it's going to result in stagnant or negative wages growth and you still get no increase to superannuation guarantee levy, you'd lose public support, and I would be quite ambivalent about that.
I mean, it's 0.5%, John. Like, you know, and I believe it should continue because, okay, if there isn't wage growth at the moment and you then shelve this increase, it is having a double whammy. But the reality is this is actually, you know, it's a novel concept to have a retirement incomes policy. Now, if you don't, people aren't able to provide for their retirement in super through a combination of mandated contributions from their employer and their own contributions, and I think people's personal contributions, there should be an element of compulsion there. But what happens is they end up on the age pension. And, you know, that's not, if that's the retirement incomes policy, great. But we're having an argument about 0.5%, really. I mean, it's not a lot of money. It's more a political argument than an economic argument, I believe.
Look, it may well be. I think also that people have to accept that if you were to delay the increase in the levy, it means that in the upcoming rounds of EBA negotiations across the economy, particularly in the lead industries which tend to set benchmarks for wages growth, construction and manufacturing, you will see larger claims anyway. So to offset the fact that there's a lower levy in place or lower than it would otherwise have been, and you're going to see higher wage claims. And I think we saw some reporting this week from a number of unions basically taking that position that if the levy is shelved, deferred, we're going to make higher wage claims. So for me, the argument isn't so much about whether workers should get less or not, or we all should get more or less. Because either way, the benefit should be there, either in higher wages under EBAs going forward to make up for that deferral, or you maintain the current schedule of increases to the levy in upcoming years. So if the argument really is that we're not going to increase the levy and wages growth is going to stay low, I think that's going to be a hard sell, and I would find that hard to support.
Now, we've got a message from a listener here, John. You're going to love this. It says, Macca, an hour ago, which is in the introduction in Late Breakfast.
Macro, I don't think you should read that out.
No. It says, Macca, you were saying, quote, what a great bloke John Pizzuto is. And I stick by that. Now, this listener says, this morning, John's sounding like a party hack. You're a party hack, John, according to this listener. I don't agree.
I've gone from commentator to hack.
To party hack.
I think for those listeners who might wonder, I mean, I am a member of the Liberal Party, so it should not surprise, but what I endeavour to do, and I hope I can say this without you guys feeling you need to contradict me, is to give you a fairly reasoned position. And where I can't, I won't do that.
Yeah, look, it's your opinion, it's your view. We have you on because, we do think you're saying what you think and believe. Now, we're not going to always agree. If we did, it'd be very boring. I always said to Tass, if we only had people on the show that we agreed with all the time, it'd be a 15-minute show.
Oh, absolutely. You need that. The question and challenge always is, and I certainly always tried to practice my politics on this, is that you need to be able to conduct tough, robust discussions civilly and cordial.
Of course.
Yeah.
And now, you guys do that.
Thank you. Now, Tass has got another question.
Have I? What's that about, Macca?
I don't know. We touched briefly on hotel.
We're nearly out of time, Macca.
We are. We touched briefly on hotel quarantine. The report, and that's going to come in November, John, I think. Is that right?
I thought it was September, but it might be September.
I think it's been extended. Just as the Royal Commission, there'll be some into aged care, there'll be some interim reports. What's your hope that the findings of both those inquiries, what do you want to see done with those findings?
Well, we'll have to see the recommendations, but obviously the recommendations to be implemented and implemented quickly. I mean, obviously we do what we can with the current pandemic, right? But this pandemic's going to be with us for a long time, so it's not as if we can wait for it to conclude. And I'm not sure there's going to be a discrete point in the upcoming months where we can say, yes, it has concluded. This is going to be with us for a long time. So we're going to need to be able to have processes that teach us lessons. We learn, we adapt. That's what I want to see. And I want that as much with the Aged Care Royal Commission and its interim reports and then its final, as much as with the code inquiry and learning what we need to do to avoid similar mistakes in the future. That's all I think we want to do.
Here.
Now, we've got a final message, John, that says, I think John is reasonable and one of the more decent members of the Liberal Party. No, it's not signed by Bernie Finn, but...
No, that's Melina, the lovely Melina.
Thank you, Melina. It's 8 by morning.
And it also says, good on you, John. Just because some of us are gay doesn't mean we have to be lefties. There you go. Am I a lefty,
more
Tass?
More power to Melina.
Am I a lefty, John? What do you reckon?
I was talking to my wife, Betty, earlier, and I didn't know what to describe you as. I think what I'm going to settle on, though, what I'm going to settle on, like Tass, is you're the enduring Macca. And just to assure you, Macca, I don't mean enduring as in, are you still here?
Yes. That's right.
John, it's always great to chat with you. Thank you for making your time available this Saturday morning. It's wet and miserable. I hope you've got somewhere nice and warm to put your feet up and try to have some time out this weekend.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, all the best, and we'll speak with you again the next
time. 8:50 tomorrow night, John, 60 Minutes.
Indeed. Thanks, guys.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.